This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the final Monday of the year. I'm Angeline Tay, and on today's Up the NT, I'll be rounding up some of the advice of the year from our previous interviews. Now, if starting a business is part of your 2016 resolution, this episode is probably a good start. So let's begin with a session with iCargo and Raj Kumar from UCSI Blue Ocean Strategy. In this episode, Richard Koch, the founder, was asking if Blue Ocean Strategy is applicable to tech startups.
Is Blue Ocean Strategy for startups or is it just for big organizations?
Right.
Now, I would tell them that, look, Blue Ocean Strategy is for everyone and, in fact, even for pre-startups, right? Even at a point where you want to conceive a business idea. So having said that, there is a very interesting concept in Blue Ocean Strategy that I would like to start off with, and it's called the strategic sequence. So many a times, a lot of organizations, we think about, okay, we have a big idea, and then we quickly implement it, and then we start to think about the cost, and then we define the price. Am I right?
Right.
So in Blue Ocean Strategy, the strategic sequence should be, first, you have to identify exceptional utility that you're offering to the market. And while doing that, you also need to build some imitation barriers, because the danger is once there is a very good utility, and if you do not build imitation barriers, there will be a lot of other people that will quickly start up and do something which is totally similar.
Right.
Now, I'll give some examples, but let me just finish the sequence first. The second part of it is the price. You need to set a right price, and then only you define the target cost. And then lastly is you look at adoption. What are the adoption hurdles? Now, this is going to be the framework of what I'm going to share, you know, in our discussion. Now, many a times, a lot of startups, they start with very good value proposition and they look at the cost. Mm-hmm. But we are talking about you need to look at the right price so that the adoption will be good.
Oh.
And then you look at your target cost. How can you look at your existing business model and reduce your cost in order for you to have your target margin? And then you start to talk about your adoption hurdles. Now, I can share one very quick example of a company that have adopted this strategic sequence to my observation and have been very successful. So, for example, MyTaxi. I love to use this example because they exemplify an exceptional utility and it created an ecosystem, a bridging program. However, what happened was there were a lot of competitors that came about, right?
Yes.
So they had to think of an expansion strategy very fast. So we'll come to that the second part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But then they come up with the right pricing that is exceptional for everybody that are very comfortable, for the taxi drivers, for the the people,
passengers.
The passengers and so on. And then they look at the cost structure and how to bring down the cost structure in order to still be profitable. But what's more interesting is, in terms of adoption, there was a huge adoption hurdle at that point of time. They really went down to the ground
can I backtrack?
Sure, please.
So you said come up with the price first and then work back on the cost.
Yes. It's different because many a times you have to look at the price corridor of the mass and you need to look at where the price point is. There are specific tools that you can use to make sure that the pricing is something that is comfortable for a lot of people. Now, the danger in a lot of business modeling is that we tend to fix on the cost. And then we start to look at putting the price above.
Yeah, right.
Now, this is really unconventional approach that we are talking about. So how is it possible to achieve this? Is by increasing value and reducing costs at the same time. In Blue Ocean, we call this value innovation. Now, there is a framework where we apply, where we ask certain questions on what can you eliminate with your existing value proposition? What can you reduce? That if you eliminate and reduce, people will not feel that they are being ripped off. But if you raise and create more value attributes that makes more sense to the customer, then it is you achieve both. You achieve value up, cost down.
Now that you have your strategic sequence put in place, but you would still fear for competition. As you expand, you would like to be the preferred brand or company to your customers. Here, Raj explains further on building imitation barrier.
Yeah,
how do you protect from that?
That is what you call a price war. If people start to come with a price war, then if you are in the real blue ocean, you have a very strong value proposition, you don't have to worry about it. Because people will know there's always the imitation goods out there that is a knockoff product or what. But at the end of the day, people know that the value that they're paying for it.
But for tech startups, it's very easy to just copy the next fella.
Correct.
Like MyTaxi, I just copy the same thing, same model.
Correct. So that's when you have to look at what we call expansion strategy, or you have to make sure your value proposition has an imitation barrier. Take, for example, all those real blue oceans are the ones where you don't look at your own industry. You borrow a value attribute from another industry. So, for example, like Aeroline. Aeroline did not look at the bus industries.
Right.
They look at the airline industries and they borrow value attributes and they created a different value proposition. Not by competing with another bus, but by competing with an airline. Nice. Then they attract new groups of customers, or what we call non-customers.
Right.
So now, instead of me flying to Singapore, I tell myself, hey, why not I just take the bus? Because I can do my work on the bus. I can, you know, there's the nice chair and there's a plug.
So they did opposite of AirAsia. AirAsia took the customers from the bus line, industry, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So now Aeroline is...
it's the other way. It's disrupting the industry all the time, right? So when they do something like this, of course, a blue ocean, you can enjoy for a certain time and space.
Right.
For maybe 2-3 years. But then other people will say, hey, why didn't we think of that? So a blue ocean will eventually become red.
Right.
So that's why in blue ocean strategy is a systematic way to continuously work on it, reproduce it. So the set of tools helps you to go back to the drawing board and to constantly do it. Who knows, your particular industry could look at the gamification of logistics. You know what I mean? It's just in a sense where it becomes more interesting. It's just like when you use Waze, it's so interesting, right? Because there's the gamification there. You know, you create points and you end up, maybe the points can be translated into something for your transporters and for your customers. Mm. And then it becomes something that is different. That's one of the ways to constantly make sure there's imitation barriers.
Your business model is set. Fundraising is definitely the next issue that most business owners and entrepreneurs face. We had a session with Ray Tang from Malkerja, which is a job finding platform for junior and non-executive job vacancies in town. In the same session, we had Jeff Payne from Golden Gates Ventures to talk about ways around fundraising from the investor's point of view.
So I think on the topic of fundraising, is that what you're alluding to? So my feeling is two things. The first thing is creating some kind of a differentiation. So it could be that, this is just hypothetical, it could be that you are, say, your brand and your site focused more on the lower educated segment, right? So maybe figuring out the segmentation and then dominating that segment so that traditional competitors and online competitors will not win you on that segment.
Yeah.
Right? So if you dominate that, that is something that will set you apart. And if you think about it, if you dominate that segment and if you try to bring whatever you've built to help that segment of the market, then expanding outside of Malaysia is another possibility.
Right.
Right. You're not stonewalled by all the other competitors outside Malaysia. Yeah. So that could be one way. And then, of course, that segment has some peculiarities. For example, employers sometimes may tend to hire a lot of people, like 50 to 1,000 people, right? Whereas the higher income segments tends to be, you know, one or two positions, that kind of thing. So maybe the product could skew towards helping employers say, oh, I want to hire 100 people within 2 months or 3 months. How can you help them out that way? So that's one way of trying to figure out your differentiation so that potential investors kind of know you are dominating certain segments.
Okay, so rather than, before you go into your second idea, so rather than trying to be all things to everybody, just a particular segment, whether it's just the SBM or whatever, you know, so getting into a more of a niche so people know, okay, they're the experts in this particular area.
So that way, branding-wise, for employers who needs the talent from that segment, knows you are the go-to site. Job seekers who are from that segment, straight away, they'll recall your brand and go. It's also easier for marketing because you don't have to say, I do this, and then people don't understand what you do. So I do this for you. The other way on fundraising is, yes, if you're a little bit not differentiated in a very crowded space, you know, job sites, and this has been around for like 10 over years, it's a bit difficult for risk investors like us to invest because typically what we want to do is we want to invest in a company that can be number one or number two in at least 4 to 5 countries in Southeast Asia.
Oh.
That's our vision, right? So maybe in 3 to 5 years, you should be in at least 4 to 5 countries. So if you're not differentiated, then every single country will block you, right? Mm. There are competitors everywhere, from the big ones, from foreigners, from locals, right? From traditional. Hence, you need to be a little special so that you can get out of one country. That's the way we think. The other way you could look at raising money, if you are not there yet, meaning your differentiation is not there yet, or it takes a while to get there, maybe it takes a year before you craft your differentiation, is to raise money not from us. Raise money from people in the industry. So like usually it's friends and ex-bosses. This is your first rounds, friends and ex-bosses. And then people who have been in the HR industry, meaning people who have run job sites before or have been in HR, they understand the pain. Mm. They understand you. They understand every single thing that goes on every day. And then you don't really need to raise a lot of money. These guys can just pool a small amount so that you can get you to the next stage, get you to differentiation, and then you come to us.
And what if you're a social enterprise looking for funds? This hurdle seems to be more daunting than the regular businesses. So we did an interview with a social enterprise called Kind Meal, founded by Andy Koh, together with Ehon Chan. He's the Magic Social Enterprise Executive Director. And we talk about where to look for funds as a social entrepreneur.
When it comes to financing, you know, a couple of challenges. One is that most people in Malaysia still do not know what is a social enterprise. So for financial institutions like banks, for example, they don't know how to design products and services that's relevant and useful for social entrepreneurs. And then when you talk about the investors, like you said, most of them actually want to have the quick return, which we know that social enterprise, right, generally speaking, do not give them the quick return or the high return in some cases. We are starting to see a couple of more educated, future-thinking investors who are looking at impact more than they do on the quick and high return. So we call them impact investors. Unfortunately, in Malaysia, we are not aware of any impact investors yet. We do know of two, I think, social enterprises who have attracted impact investment from outside of Malaysia, mostly in Singapore. A question for you to also think about is that, is investment the right way to go for you? Because there are so many ways that we can think about financing, whether it's about getting grants, getting loans from, you know, financial institutions, getting loans from friends, families and foes, you know, the FFF, investment and so on and so forth. But all of this, obviously, there's pros and cons. And it comes back down to your business model and your long-term vision. And I always say that one of the big things to consider is that long-term vision and how your current financing would help you get to that long-term vision. So don't be short-sighted with what you want to achieve quickly and just get money in, because it will affect how you then structure. Investment is a big one because you are giving out equity, right? And, you know, as you give out equity, then you have to balance the shareholder satisfaction and confidence and your own vision as well. So you just have to be very conscious of that. We're obviously happy to connect you to a couple of banks that we have, you know, educated them on what is a social enterprise. And, you know, if you want to go down the path of loans, if you want to go down the FFF, friends, family and fools, then, you know, that's up to you. Crowdfunding is another popular one these days that you can use as well. Otherwise, there's also impact investors that we have connected with as well.
Next up, we'll hear more from Ehon Chan on where you could look for grants for social entrepreneurs. So stay with us. I'm Angeline Tay, and this is our year-end roundup for the advice from 2015 Up the NT episodes. BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're still tuned to Up the NT on Enterprise. Today, we're highlighting some of the key advice for the year from all our interviews on this show. In the first part of the show, we had Raj Kumar on the strategic sequence at the pre-startup phase. Then we had Jeff Payne from Golden Gate Ventures talking about what investors are looking for when you're out searching for funds, and also Ehon Chan on fundraising for social entrepreneurs. We're continuing with Ehon on whether there are funds available at all for social entrepreneurs in Malaysia.
There are a few that you can look into. Obviously, it's quite limited right now, and the way to look for it is actually to look for the intermediaries who are supporting social causes. So in these cases, I assume you're still under 35. So you can go to Maharapan. So Maharapan is Youth Trust Foundation. Right. They do have grants for youth projects, they call it. They also conduct the Social Business Challenge, which provide funding up to 50,000, if I'm not wrong. I do have to check on that one, for social businesses as well. The second one you can look into is British Council. So I know British Council have ran 3 rounds of Entrepreneurs for Good competition, where there is funding attached to the competition. And Magic also runs Amplify Awards every year. The Amplify Awards is an award to highlight successful operating social enterprises who have been running for several years, has an auditor account and proven impact and also business acumen. We then give them a capital of up to 150,000 ringgit to amplify their impact, amplify their business operations, or amplify their ventures, whether it's through diversification of their revenue or to scale up their venture. So there's a few things that you can look into.
Now, another common challenge that most entrepreneurs face is talent. Where do you find them? Or should you develop talents organically? Yap Yensi, who is the owner of Yap Chan Core Pain Treatment Center, has their own passionate physician. However, Yen is looking to expand Yap Chan Core to many more outlets which require more talents on management level. Here, John Kam from The Jungle People suggests on grooming talent within the organization.
So you're basically facing something that a lot of small organizations face as they grow. And the question that you're facing right now, the dilemma that you're facing is, should I groom somebody from within, run the business, become the COO, so to speak, or the general manager, or should I bring in somebody else? My personal preference is always, if you have an option, develop organically. Because right. If you develop organically, it does several things. One, it tells people that you've got a career path for them. And that if they do work hard and they focus on the job and do really, really well, there is an opportunity for them to grow with the organization. And that sends out good messages for everyone. Because even people who have a passion, and you spoke about people who are passionate at their job, physiotherapists and so on and so forth, which is brilliant, right? You want people who are really passionate about the job. You don't want to kill that. But even passionate people need to see that there is an option to grow, that they have options. Well, to address that, what do you need the person to be able to do? Can you write out a job description? Can you write out the roles and responsibilities? Can you write them out? Can you define them? If you can write them out and define them, you'd be able to answer the question of, do I have the people inside to be able to do that job? Second question that you got to ask is, what kind of competencies will this person need in order to be able to do that job? So what's the job? Yep, run the business. But what does running the business entail? Does the person need financial competencies? Does the person need a background in HR? Do they need to know the franchise model, for example, and so on and so forth? So what kind of competencies would this person need in order to be able to do that job? And the third question you got to ask is, how do I provide a person with that experience? So who's got the potential for it, and how do I provide the person with that experience? Which also comes into the question of, how much time do you have? So if you've got a long time, you've got a couple of years and you're willing to wait and you're willing to groom and grow, go for it. If you don't have the time for it, then it might be time to look externally.
I mean, I think we have some time. We're not looking to...
Yeah, you're pretty young, so...
Yeah, thanks. For me, because I guess I see them as mainly physiotherapists.
Right.
It's hard to see that leap in
right,
which
that
they
transition
would take.
That they would need
yeah.
to make.
Yeah.
Well, you're basically looking at two, or in your case, maybe even three different career pathing lines. One is what we call technical professionals. So it is possible for a person to not take on managerial duties and still progress. And they progress based on the technical expertise. So for example, if a physiotherapist comes in and doesn't want to go into managing a center or so on and so forth, wants to remain where they're passionate in, where they're good in. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. But how does he or she then grow within that vocation? Do they grow by education? So from a bachelor's in physiotherapy to a master's in physiotherapy or moving on to a doctorate. But there is a technical professional line that should be possible. However, that's not going to be enough to help your company grow. That's going to be vital to create scalability in terms of quality of the product, which is the physiotherapist, right? So as the physiotherapists grow in their competencies, the quality that you have grows, but the business might not necessarily grow. So you will need to identify people who want to take the managerial leadership role. So you got a technical professional and you've got the managerial professional, right? And these two are... could be seen as equal opportunities or equal chances to grow within the organization. Somebody either from the physiotherapists or from an external brought in as a manager will need to take the managerial role. Now, if the physiotherapists, if you think they've got the business acumen and the business savvy in order for them to make the transition, then you probably want to allow that particular person to have exposure to the back-end work, to HR, to running the business, to the hiring, to finance, and so on and so forth. And then make a decision together with the person jointly whether or not this is a career path that they might be interested in. Well, the third one that you've got is entrepreneurial, because you've got a franchise system going on. So it could also be a potential for a person to say, you know what, I'm really interested in running my own business.
So if you're ready and you're at that stage where you're looking to expand into regional market, as a tech startup, Catch That Bus's Ashwin Jayapalasingam asked Julio Zilianis, who is the managing director of Zalora, for a preview on payment methods for the other markets.
So we've been operating in Malaysia and Singapore primarily, which is a fairly mature-ish, I suppose, in the region, e-commerce environment, because credit cards are quite prevalent, but we're also looking to expand beyond. So places like Thailand, Indonesia, Philippines, where credit cards are not so prevalent. I think what I wanted to ask is, you know, how do you deal with payment issues in such countries? Do you go with a cash-based system or, you know, something like PayPal, which is universal?
Well, let's take Zalora's approach. So you mentioned Thailand, Indonesia, Philippines. Mm-hmm. These are countries which are, for us at the moment, between the 50 and the 70% cash-based. Okay. Now, this said, it's a different business model. What we do is deliver a physical good. And upon delivery of that physical good, you can integrate the collection of the cash. So it's more of a procedure and the security of that cash collection approach than actually orchestrating the movement of a physical person from us to them, which already happens and is already part of the process of e-commerce as a whole. Mm-hmm. Very different from a business model like a travel one, where what you want to send is really just a confirmation. Yes. Now, if I'm thinking hotels, I don't know how Thomas is doing it, but one of the solutions is pay in the hotel and hotel paying affiliate fee to you. Buses, even more complex than that. So what do? You put somebody collecting cash at the entrance of every bus? It's going to kill your ultimate conversion rate, or better, it's going to increase your cancellation rate upon that transaction.
Yes.
So what you need to think in terms of is not cash probably, but cash relatable. So other systems that people are using quite a lot, even in Malaysia, are the automatic bank transfers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the so-called IPAT8-driven systems. IPAT8 is doing the same thing in Indonesia, so they're expanding over there. And there's other players doing it across the region. These are payment methods that are nearly as big as credit card for us. Mm. Another system that I've seen implemented in Italy was the ATM payment in the bus station. Mm. So it was something a bit different, whereby basically minutes before the bus, you would pay in an ATM in the bus station. There's various methods. What you want to try and avoid as much as you can is putting somebody, as I said, in the bus or at the entrance of the bus. Mm. Ultimately, this will lead in an opposite direction of the kind of customer education that you want to do.
Competition. Yes, we're back to competition. We're in a time where there will always be someone else in the space. So how do we compete against other companies who are well-funded versus the bootstrap entrepreneurs? Thomas Lebutka, who is the co-founder of Hotel Quickly, concludes our year-end roundup on how we as an entrepreneur should look at things at a different perspective.
One thing that I see the angle is the perspective that you take. Right? Because as an entrepreneur, you can either say, okay, I see so many difficulties, so many challenges, and so difficult, or you actually see, okay, how can I benefit from this? Right? Mm-hmm. What advantages do I see? And, you know, if you have a competition around, like in case of Hotel Quickly, we started off, there was not much competition in direct space, so we were, you know, like really good in last minute, really good in apps, we enabled the customers to book smoothly, but they were in the travel. You have some players which are within offline, you have some, you know, players established within online. So there are certain, you know, challenges that you have with that. But it goes as in the same way as when you're driving. I mean, if you're driving and you're focusing on a wall, on the bridge or whatever, and you go fast, as you do when you build a company, you're just going to hit the wall. You're going to hit the bridge, you know. So I think you should not focus on, okay, there is a competition here on the side and there's a challenge on the other side. Mm-hmm. You should focus really straight and focus on the customer. Because the moment you can build up the company successfully and win is actually when you're serving customer that is willing to pay, not when you are trying to outrun or outpace the big competition, which is doing something, and you're just trying to emulate what they are. in a space where sometimes you cannot win, right? So if you have a really big player which is well-funded and you try to follow exactly the same steps that they do, well, good luck, because you're trying to serve exactly the same customer exactly the same way, but you don't have the same resources. That's not your competition. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not your competitive advantage. So what you want to understand is, okay, who is the customer that likes me? Why do they like me? Why do they really, really like me? And how can I make that experience even better? And that's what you want to focus on, not on the competition.
And this wraps up the year of 2015 on Up the Ante. Thank you for listening. If you have any suggestions for this show, like what topics to cover, please tweet us at BFM Radio or write to us at enterprise@bfm.my. I'm Angeline Tay and Happy New Year, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.